from KCRW. This is Here Be Monsters. A quick content note, this episode is, in part, an exploration of the meat industry. It includes the sounds of calves being dehorned and castrated. There's nothing too graphic, but it could be potentially upsetting.
So this is where the heifers are. I'm gonna spend like 30 seconds. You can just get out and record. So I'm putting a lidocaine block in right now. So this is like, I try to block it as best I can, but sometimes the block doesn't work. But this one's pretty good. This block works pretty good.
When dairy cows are still calves, they have these little round bumps on their heads called buds. And these buds are the beginnings of horns that could eventually be dangerous to farmers. So farmers hire large animal veterinarians, like Mike Peros, to use a hot circle of iron to cauterize the buds.
So their horn is sort of like your fingernail, and we're burning the tissue that will become the horn, and we'll destroy it. You can do it chemically, or you can do it by burn. And so this is what we're doing here, and that's good. We'll go to the other side.
What you're hearing is the first of several disbuddings Mike will do today. This is a big organic dairy farm. These cows have numbers, not names. In a year or two, they'll join their mothers and aunts and start producing organic grass-fed milk. Later in the day, Mike has an appointment scheduled for another disbudding, and that's at a smaller farm, what Mike calls a hobby farm. There's just one calf over there, and she has a name, not a number.
So I would argue that what's good for the animal welfare would be to have all these animals not to have to go through this procedure at all. They know the gene that causes the horns to grow. But the public doesn't like the idea of genetically engineering their food. I mean, they don't even like genetically engineered corn, let alone animals. You know, it's just simply replacing a gene. So people want natural. That's good. We'll go to the other side. And, you know, we could sedate them, too. That would be another thing we could do.
Why don't you?
Well, that's a good question. Why don't I? One would argue that maybe we don't need the sedation. And again, the problem with the animal welfare research is, how do you ask the animal if it's in pain? We have to look at their behavior. That's really the best thing we can do. Here, I gotta get... One assumes that if they don't move, then they don't experience pain, but that's actually not really true. Some animals, like for example, sheep are really stoic. Their response is to sort of hide their pain. I know, sweetie. We're almost done. Almost done. Early on, I thought, well, when they're young, they don't feel pain at all, right? And it really actually doesn't make sense. I mean, the thought is that they have less nervous tissue when they're young, but we really don't know that. Just because they don't move doesn't mean, again, that they might feel it. You know, the key to an experienced veterinarian is that knows where I'm standing. The farmer gets all the smoke, but I don't. At one point, we treat animals as economic units. And then another one, we treat them as members of the family. Our relationship with animals is problematic. It's strange. I've accepted it.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about... The podcast about...
The unknown.
All right, so if it's okay with you, I'm going to flip on. So we are now officially live.
Yes.
We're running. To answer your question about how many listeners we have, it's funny because it's something that... Mike once told me that he felt privileged to live in between two worlds. In one world, he's a part-time college professor teaching a bunch of leftist college students about agriculture. In the other world, he's a veterinarian who takes care of animals before they become food. His human clients are mostly Trump-voting farmers in rural Washington state. He knows a lot about the animals we eat. I've been feeling bad about eating meat. I'm one of those contrite meat eaters, someone who tells myself and others that someday, eventually, when I'm older and wiser, I'll kick my pesky meat habit. Not today, but someday. And that someday just never seems to come. I tell myself I just have to take baby steps, like cutting out red meat and making sure I only buy chicken and fish from quote-unquote natural sources. As long as the animals I eat lived good, natural lives, or if they were cared for and killed by good humans, then maybe it's not evil, right? But I cheat my own rules. And even when I follow them, I feel like I'm making the world worse. Mike eats meat, and I don't think he feels bad about it. So why can't I?
So you are equating or associating a good life for animals with a natural life for animals. But as you know, nature's cruel. And, I mean, wildlife suffer tremendously. If you take an approach instead that we have a responsibility for animals under our care, you're going to protect them from nature to a certain degree, right? You're going to prevent them from being cold. You're going to prevent them from being too hot. You're going to provide shelter. You're going to provide food for the animal, right? I'm kind of I'm a mixed animal veterinarian, which is sort of a not very common.
What does that mean?
That means that I've done work on dogs and cats, and I do, like, my current practice is about half horses, half cattle. So I work with companion animals and food animals. Today, you're spending all this time working with food animals. These animals are not pets. So
you used to think, you were saying earlier, you used to think that animals, when they were young enough, they didn't feel pain?
I just didn't really think about animals in pain that much, I guess. Veterinarians are trained to equate animal welfare with animal health. And yeah, we use anesthesia, but a lot of the times we're trained, or at least I was trained, probably it's different now, I was trained that, it's all about restraint. How do you get the job done? How do you restrain? And it's really only been relatively recently that there's been a huge emphasis on pain management in animals. But there's a general thought that, including in humans, same thing, that younger animals don't experience pain, and younger humans, babies, don't experience the same kind of pain until they develop. A much simpler way of framing things as a veterinarian, if you don't want to deal with the messiness, is simply say, well, a good life for an animal is a healthy life. Is there something wrong with that?
I have two thoughts about this. The first is that in human beings, when we talk about a healthy person, we include mental health, which I don't even know if that's possible to address that necessarily in animals, because there's a language barrier. My second thought is that can be true, but does the fact that they are kept healthy so that they can make
good meat so that the product that is their body tastes better? Does that kind of negate it, you know?
I think it's even more complicated. You know, so veterinarians like to cloak ourselves in science, and we're like, okay, I know what the best thing to do for this animal is to improve the life of the animal by improving its health, okay? But what if a cat who's obese wants to eat more food? Look, I know I eat too much pizza. I understand that. I would argue that if you took pizza away from me, my welfare would be diminished. My health would be better. What does an animal need? What does an animal want? The need part has to do with health. Protect the animal. Sorry, I'm kind of lost. Protect the animal from harm, from physical harm. Improve their health. But also, you have to figure out what they want. Right? So those are two, if you think about those two things, the same thing with children. Again, it's back to a model, a pediatric model. I don't know if I'm in the right place. Looks like it's set up for cows. I see someone. Am I in the right place? Am I in the right place? That's who I'm looking for.
She's such a good little girl. What a pretty heifer. I mean, she is gorgeous. She's never had a day of scours. That's not gonna feel good, honey. No, my little girl.
Okay, so I'm gonna stick this needle in right here.
It's okay, baby. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay, baby. She goes, "You're not my daddy no more." It's okay, baby.
Girl. She's not moving too much. That's good block. Good girl. That's how we do it, textbook. Let's see if you get lucky in the other one.
Oh, that's my girl.
That's a little bit less of a good block.
It's okay, baby. It's okay. It's okay. It's all right. I know. This sucks, man. What are you doing?
Here, I've got some pills we can provide for pain afterwards. You giving it milk?
Yeah.
I'll give you
three
some.
Times a day.
I'll get you some tablets you can put in the milk for pain. It's meloxicam, which is similar to what humans take.
Okay.
So we're on our way to a small, like, family farm?
A hobby farm.
That's what you call it if it's just, like, a family, like...
No, they don't need to make any money off of their farm. Not, it's called animal husbandry is what it is, right? So husbandry is, I think it's Norse. It means bounded to the house, right? You take care of animals, they take care of us, right? This sort of bond, it's called the ancient contract, right? It's a contract that we have with animals. But that requires knowledge. For example, the first place we dehorned some calves, they're in the stanchions, very organized, right? Here, we had to tie it to a pole for a laundry line pole. And it worked fairly well. This is someone getting new into a raw milk dairy, and they're great. They really cared about their cows. They had names, not numbers, for their cows, right? there's definitely a bond that they've formed with their cows and their calves. And that's great. Also, they probably don't know how to feed the cows as well. Maybe they'll feed hay that doesn't have a good enough quality feed. In other words, they may not be giving what the animal needs. I mean, the general thought is that small scale, old McDonald farm is better for animals, and that's not necessarily true, right?
I mean, I think, like, for me as an outsider who doesn't know a lot about how this works, the idea that an animal who is on a hobby farm, you know, it's like that animal is more so the focus of these people, right? Whereas, like, in a factory farm situation, there's no, like, individual care.
Yep.
I mean, maybe that's, like, a very American perspective of mine that's like, well, yep, if there's individual care, if they know that animal and love that animal, then that's, you know, preferable.
I don't think that's necessarily true. With large-scale farms, you can potentially, well, hire an animal welfare specialist or have the right equipment and pay for the right equipment to handle the animals. You also have specialization of labor. So if you have someone, you know, you can afford to hire a veterinarian, or you can have someone who is just trained to milk cows and someone else is just trained to feed calves versus someone like where we just went to, where they're just learning. So now we're going to go castrate a calf that they don't even have a way of restraining the animal. So we're going to stress it out by chasing it or potentially other things. And I'm going to have to be creative and probably end up sedating the animal. And so it's an example where just people's general assumptions about, you know, farm animal welfare and scale and individual attention is problematic. If a good life for animals is a natural life, why do people think that the welfare of animals is better when there is a relationship between humans and animals? Sort of agree with that sentiment. The emotional side of me says what's really cool is when we do name our cows. Like, you feel better about eating meat if you have some sort of relationship with the animal versus going to the store and buying hamburger and not knowing where the animal came from. But that has nothing to do with the welfare of the animal. Why would we care about our relationship with the animal? I mean, they probably don't care about us, potentially, right? They might be better off in a herd where they never see a human whatsoever. You have machines that move them, that don't harm them, that let them do what they want to do, like a robot dairy, where they get to be milked whenever they want, and they have no contact with humans. What if they have no contact with humans? And then when they get slaughtered in these slaughter places, the best slaughter facilities, by the way, are large scale. If you go to a small scale slaughter facility, they don't have the mechanisms in place where these cattle will just go basically walk up a ramp, a conveyor belt, and then are used, you know, a bolt gun that kills them instantaneously, all mechanized. Humans make errors. They miss their shot. Machines don't, or they do it less. But we're grossed out. We're disgusted by the machine for some reason.
One, six, seven, four. Where is this place at?
You really are in the mill.
Yeah, I was gonna tell. I should have told you I'd stand out here. Can you just kind of follow the driveway? And did you want to drive all the way down to the pen, and I can open up the gate?
Yeah, if I can drive there.
Go ahead, and the gate's kind of this way. But if you go ahead, me, and then I'll open it up.
All right. Whatever. Sounds good.
Ah.
get me a bucket of water?
Does that have to be clean water?
Yeah, I don't want that water.
He doesn't want that water.
What about pots? Is the water over there?
Well, I don't know. I'll take that water.
But, you know, I can't watch this.
What do you mean by you can't watch this?
Oh, my God.
I'm gonna need your help.
Suck it up.
What are you about to do?
Well, we just gave a shot at xylazine to knock this animal because we don't have facilities or anything like that. And now I'm going to go castrate. Now they can still feel some things. It's a little dangerous, you're going to see, for me.
What are you doing to my baby?
Hey, listen, you guys don't have a facility, so you're going to have to do this.
Okay.
You're going to have to do this. Okay. Do you understand? Like that. Come over here. Send me that bucket.
Now watch, I pass out.
Are you going to pass out?
I hope
not. I don't want that. What do you mean by going to pass out? You don't like blood?
No, not really.
Don't look.
Well,
I'll do my best. I'll make you proud.
It's the part where you're going to have to hold on tight. Great. So anyways, this is an emasculator. What this does is it crushes and cuts, so we don't want any blood. And so basically I cut the scrotal sac off, pulled the testicles out, and removed the testicles. So this is gonna heal on its own, okay? All right, let's let it go. He's gonna wake up in an hour or two.
Okay.
So we just leave.
We should just let him out when he's ready then, right?
Yep.
Okay. Ready.
Yeah, you can leave mom with him and everything else.
Okay.
Yep.
And Arlene's got the check.
Yeah, I got
good.
It.
I like getting paid too.
No, we were gonna stiff
today was,
you.
Today was free day, I forgot to tell you.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
hey,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah,
I gotta tell you, that was the hardest thing I have seen today, and it wasn't even the procedure, it was the mama cow being outside of the pen crying like that, and also like as we were walking away and she was going up and kind of like investigating.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Made me a little emotional.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, this is a good experiment for us. The question is this, if we show people who have no idea how animals are raised for food, if we show them how it really is, will they be less likely to eat meat or more likely to eat meat or neither? You know, just sort of has no effect.
I mean, we talked earlier about perceiving pain based on body language, right? Because that's kind of the best we've got. We could also, you know, perceive stress based on cortisol levels.
So the cow was bellowing just like it would. It's nature, it's evolved to care for its offspring, just like humans, our nature is to care for offspring. Paying attention to our nature, humans and animals, is important. It's just not necessarily equated with good, right? There's just so many examples where you shouldn't use evolutionary biology to tell you what you ought to do. It will lead to horrible things. That's what ethics are. That's why, you know, that's the whole point. The question is how should we take care of animals? That's what you want to know. Should is a normative statement. It's not a descriptive statement. You know, the same thing goes with this. We've evolved to eat meat. That doesn't mean that we should eat meat. You know, men have evolved to maybe dominate over women, for example.
let's just say. Does that mean that we should? That's ridiculous. Now, can we use nature as a guide to understand some things? Maybe. But it should never, we can't derive what we ought to do from what is.
Why do you eat meat?
I don't know.
I mean, you just made the case for, like, sure, humans have evolved to eat meat, but that doesn't necessarily mean we should.
Yeah. You'll never hear me say because I've evolved to eat meat. And you'll never hear me say things like, I need to eat meat to survive, because I don't think that's true. But I will tell you this. If science told me that animals could contemplate their own death, I would not eat meat. So I don't think they have. I'm not aware of that. So that's one reason. The other one is I probably just don't have, I mean, it sounds like a kind of a bullshit answer, but I don't have the self-control, probably. I probably, you know, maybe I should not eat meat, but I can't. I mean, I like eating meat. That could be another reason. And then I have a really bullshit answer that I haven't really worked out yet, but here, I'm gonna let it go. Without the chicken industry, you'd have 9 billion birds less. The question is during that 8 weeks when each bird is alive, is it better off being alive or not being alive at all? Yep. Fun stuff.
Mike Peros is a mixed animal veterinarian, animal welfare specialist, and college professor working in Thurston County, Washington. I first met Mike a year ago while reporting on a class he was teaching at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. His class was about the importance of cultivating viewpoint diversity in predominantly liberal places, particularly college campuses. And if you know anything about Evergreen, you'll know why this was somewhat controversial. And if you want to hear that story, we'll have a link to it on our website, hbmpodcast.com. And there you'll also see some photos of Iris, the beautiful little heifer, just after she was disbudded. She has these two circles burned onto the top of her head. Again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. I'm Bethany Denton. I produce this episode. And if this episode inspires you to share dieting advice with me, I kindly ask that you refrain. But feel free to get in touch with my favorite vegetarian and editor, Jeff Emptman. You may have heard that we recently added some new merch to our store. We have these amazing stickers designed by Violet Reed. We're calling them our Can of Worms stickers, which I think is pretty self-explanatory, but if you haven't seen them yet, you can check them out at hbmpodcast.com/store. And I encourage you to get them while they're hot, or while they're cold and slimy and wriggling out of a can, I guess. Again, they're at hbmpodcast.com/store. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our senior editor there is Kristen Lepore. We get additional support for freelance contributions from KCRW's independent producer project. Music by Circling Lights and The Black Spot. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.